Livewire with Phil Richards.
Hi, this is Phil Richards. Welcome to Livewire. Today I'm chatting with Alan McKenzie from D-Ream. All right, Alan, welcome along to Livewire. Hi there, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Right, now when D-Ream first became famous, its main members were Peter Kanner on vocals, and he was a songwriter, along with yourself. And then, of course, there was another member, Brian Cox, who played keyboards for several years in D-Ream while studying his PhD. Tell us all about that. Tell us the story.
Well, I mean, initially it was just Peter and me. We met up in a nightclub. Basically, I was running a nightclub. And, I was so young then as well. And Pete came down and my partner at the time got us together. And he wanted some help with some music, so I went and helped him. So it was just him and me, really. Pete was a bit of an all-round musical genius even then. And so he just pretty much did everything. I was just sort of learning the ropes. I'd never been in a studio. And we did a load of PAs with him. Pete, at the time, using his girlfriend, we'd got a session girl, really, and who'd done some vocals, Deborah. And she did some backing vocals for us. And it just sort of evolved from there. And then we just did some PAs. And then Deborah left and we had other backing singers. So went through a load of them. So, and then Brian was our driver. We used to do PAs and around the country. And Brian used to drive us there because I did it at first, but then I had other commitments. And then, so we'd just have this ragtag bunch of people, really, who just basically mime keyboards, this, that, and everything. Because Pete and I did all the album together. And a few session musicians for stuff that, you know, we couldn't do. And then I think it just got bigger and bigger. And then we were doing TVs and stuff, so you needed people. And Brian, to be fair, although his dress sense had less something to be desired back then, he was not a bad-looking chap back then and better looking than all of us anyway. Well, he wasn't too bad-looking himself, to be fair. I was probably the odd one out on that front. So Pete drafted him in because he's driving. He wasn't the best driver in the world. Kept getting lost.
Really?
He was a keyboard player. He'd been in a band called Peter, which was some sort of rock band. I mean, he was Peter's friend. He'd been introduced through someone. I think it was through a sound engineer or something. And Brian, he was at uni and he wanted some work. Basically, that's how Pete got him on driving. And then, as I say, Pete found out he's a keyboard player. I thought, well, you rubbish at driving, we'll get someone else to do that. You do the keyboard playing on the PAs and on the TVs. So that's how it sort of that's how it went on. And so he was kind of like he just popped up and did all these sort of things. And then obviously things were taking off. So he came and did all the TV appearances. And then after the first album, I left basically because I'd had enough of it for a little while. I got back to it later on, and then I think Pete sort of drafted him in full time after that, really, just to help because he went on tour properly, I think, take that at the time. So he needed a full band, and Brian was obviously there, so he ended up doing that stuff.
Yeah, Brian didn't really want to do it as a career though, did he? I mean, he was always destined to be a scientist. I mean, at the time he was studying anyway, wasn't he?
Yes, that's right. From my understanding, it was initially, he'd left college to do some part-time, and I think he ended up doing it longer than he anticipated, and I think he might have stayed, to be honest. I think after the third album, had it gone on, seen the success, and he'd done a third album, Brian may well have stayed. But I think Pete told him, he said, "No, Luke, this is going to finish now for a while, so you get back to your studies." And so he did, and luckily for him, because he's done been quite successful doing that, been a lot more successful than being a keyboard player for D-Ream anyway.
All right, so now you smashed the charts with a number one single, which was, of course, Things Can Only Get Better. What year was that?
Well, it was number one in January 94. It came out 93, 93 we put it out first with Warner's, and then... And even an instrumental version of that came out in 92. It was just an instrumental in 92. So we did it. I mean, we recorded it in 1991. An element of it had been recorded in 91, and then it changed and changed until 92. And then, and eventually it came out properly in 93, and number one, 94. So it's had a long life.
Yeah, what a great track, and a great sentiment, and a powerful track, in fact.
Yeah, it was. I think it lost its way a bit after when Labour took it on in 97. And I think with all that went on with that, and I don't want to get into politics because it's quite boring, really. I think people, with what happened there, people kind of lost its way a bit because it got linked up with all that sort of stuff, with all the Tony Blair stuff and everything in Iraq and all that stuff. And I think it's had a lot of time to settle. And then during lockdown and stuff, it took on its a sort of new lease of life again with the NHS thing and everything. So it kind of got back to what it was originally about, and not because I'd left the band by then, and Peter, when Labour took it, it was right sort of embers of the, you know, the dying embers of the band back then, you know, for that period anyway. And I think it just took on I don't know. I mean, people left it alone. For example, you know, like lots of songs get used in lots of TV adverts and stuff, and that to me is like a perfect song for a TV advert. No one really touched it over here yet. Over in Australia and stuff, people used it there because they didn't really sort of associate it with that thing. So it did get it got used in things abroad, but not over here. So you know, never know. I think it'll probably have another lease of life at some stage, no doubt.
Do you think artists, you know, talking, say from your own point of view, like their songs being used in ads, or do you think they don't really like that?
I think it could. If you write songs, you want to make money out of them. You know, you don't do it to make money. You do it for the love of writing a song. You know, generally, when you write something or do something, you don't really think your initial thing is it's not going to do very well. But if it does, and you start, you know, it becomes a job, doesn't it? So you need to make money out of it. So I think if you're at a stage, a level of, say, something like Bono or something, where you're making so much money anyway, then you probably don't really care or want. But I think when you're, when you're just a sort of average artist who, you know, you want to try and make as much money as you can out of it when something's doing well. So I personally have no issue with stuff being used in adverts. I mean, it depends on the advert, obviously. But personally, I just think it's, you know, it's a song, it's there. If people want to use it and use it in that sort of way and then pay us for use of it, then I'm quite happy.
Now, you followed up that great success with You Are the Best Thing, and also you had Shoot Me With Your Love. How did they do?
Well, Best Thing again came out in the first year, 93, from the first album. We had like four top 30 hits, I think, and they were all re-released. So, well, not all re-released, but Best Thing was re-released again after Thing. So that's sort of, I think that was number three then. Yeah, so that's had a few releases as well. Shoot Me was from the second album. That was a top 10 single as well. And we had like Unforgiven and I Like It, Blame It On Me. That's off the top of my head. And then I think the second album, I wasn't really around. But yeah, Shoot Me was the last top 10 hit.
Yeah, and you had some great top 40 hits with three albums and two made the top five, of course. And you were on Top of the Pops and supported Take That. Top of the Pops... It's a sad thing that we don't have that on a regular basis anymore.
I agree completely. I mean, I know times change, but for my youth anyway, something you sort of tuned into on a Thursday night. And when we did it, I mean, funny enough, it was on BBC4's doing the repeats of on 1993 now, and our first appearance was shown last Friday, so it's... It was quite weird to mention Top of the Pops there because it was on last Friday for our first time on it, and it was an institution. I know TV's changed now, and there's lots of things like your MTVs and stuff like that. But not everyone has Sky, and I say Sky, I don't even know what MTV's on. I never watch it. So, but you know, people's viewing habits are different now. I don't know if it's just us oldies that always think. Think, oh yeah, it's a shame it's not on, because I don't know what the younger generation think. But I like the fact that you had all the, you know, acts that are completely different from each other, all sort of chucked in, and it was, you know, the charts. I mean, who knows now, there's so many music programs on TV, so much choice even with radio and stuff like that you know, maybe it would be redundant. I don't know.
Yeah, I think I loved it, and I agree with you. I suppose you've got Jules now. That's very popular, of course. quite a different feel to it, though, obviously.
Very different. I know, I'd like to be doing it. We'd quite like to do that one. I think, as well, back then, we only had the three, maybe four channels, if I don't even know Channel 4 was up, but probably wasn't at first. And so, and now, I mean, I don't know how many hundreds of channels we've got now.
Indeed.
But it does seem to me that in terrestrial TV, there's not a lot of opportunity for music being put, you know, like, so you've got duels and you've got things like this, like that Sunday brunch thing on Sundays on Channel 4, but they're very, you know, very small things. You know, there's not that, the sort of music shows really, you know, this, yeah, it's a shame.
Now, you've released some new singles. You've got an album called Open Hearts and Open Minds. So it's Open Hearts, Open Minds, isn't it?
We put the album out about a year. Basically, we've been writing the album for a little while. We started getting right on it, and when lockdown happened, and we sort of, legally, obviously, we got in and we were finishing it during then. And we kept thinking things were going to open up. So we were holding off and holding off. And then eventually when we thought things opened up, we put a single out. So and the album came out about a year ago, it was, last July. In fact, yeah, near enough, exactly a year ago. And thinking things would open up, which they didn't. So we're still sort of pushing that album, and we've put a few singles out from it. I mean, we've been doing it all ourselves. That's including vinyl and CDs, everything. And even made the videos ourselves. But we've got a new single, which isn't from the album. We had extra tracks we've done. And so we're kind of working on a new album, although who knows when that'll come out. But we did think we'd I was remembering, I remember. I was very young. In fact, I wasn't even born. But I remember the Beatles, when they put singles out that weren't on albums. I kind of liked that idea. So we thought we might do a couple of singles that are just not, that are not on the album. So we've got a new single, Pedestal, which isn't on the album, but it's still trying to kind of promote the album, if you know what I mean. It's it's weird now, because normally our singles just plucked from an album and they push it, and we're actually going to get a video director to actually do this video himself, because we've been doing the videos ourselves, and as much as we think they're quite good, they're probably not as not as good as somebody who actually knows what they're doing. So yeah, it's hard work, but now things are open, we're getting gigs, a few gigs now, so we're starting to get out there and start to promote it a little bit. So hopefully the album will start, you know, start selling more, basically, because it's difficult when you're trying to do it as yourself. I do it all from my own house, basically. I've got my garage, just looks like some warehouse. I've got, like, it's full of records and CDs and mailers and stuff like that. So I could do with emptying it.
All right. Well, good luck with all the performing around the UK then, and the festivals and things, which will no doubt be happening, especially next year, I guess, now as well.
Well, yeah, I think so. We've done a few, and we did. I mean, when we did last, we had 25,000 people there last. It's they're coming on slowly, and next year is our 30th year anniversary of the release of the album, the first time before it was all re-released. But so hopefully we'll be doing a few things on the back of that. I think things are looking up now, so hopefully it's all well. things are going to get better, I think, is the phrase. Yeah, it's starting to look up a little bit, so hopefully we can get, you know, we can get a few things in, as long as the economy doesn't completely die.
Indeed. Right, well, give us the details of your social media now then.
Yeah, Dream are on Facebook. I think it's just Dream, if you look on Facebook, and that's it sort of comes up there. The usual one is Twitter, and it's Dream, D_Ream Music, and we're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm hopeless with social media, so I think I just about work Facebook, but yeah, we are on there.
All right, okay. Well, thank you ever so much for joining us on the programme. Should we finish by playing that new single, Pedestal, then?
Lovely. Thank you very much for that. Thanks for having me, Phil.
Lovely to chat with you.
Please tell me. Ain't got no feeling in my head, my hands. You just don't mean it in my head, my hands. I can't believe it, I just can't. I put you way up on a pedestal. You were the dream I could believe, but you just kept on deceiving me. I put you
LiveWire is produced by Steve Osborne Media. Steve Osborne Media.